How often do you play with Acker and Kenny on as the three Bs?
Half a dozen times a year maximum. You know what I mean? Our availability is not such that we're all available the same day, hardly ever, you see.
And that's right, again, yeah.
The promoter has to have a hall or a theatre which you can use,
yeah.
You see. And so that's kind of makes it difficult. Yes,
yeah.
It's getting a bit louder, isn't it? A bit.
Chaps, I'm just doing an interview. I don't record it with the radio.
Right, okay then. So you're about to, just a few times a year then, two or three times
a year.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Now, I understand that you taught Lonnie Donegan how to play the banjo.
No,
so you didn't.
That's a myth, isn't it? It's a bit of kind of a fib. Lonnie invented it because it sounded good on the stage and it sounded funny. But in point of fact, I mean, I remember he said, yes, I play the guitar, and then Chris Barber said, play the banjo and show me how to do it. Because the joke is that when I first met Lonnie Donegan, he joined my amateur band in 1952, playing the banjo.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't teach him anything on the banjo. I wish I taught him the guitar, because he wasn't much of a guitarist,
right.
Technically speaking. You know,
it's just that I read somewhere,
But I mean, he always said it, but I met Chris Barber on the tube train, and I was at a guitar, and he said to me, can you play the banjo, or get a banjo, you can join my band. Nothing of the sort.
Right.
He joined my band in spring of 52.
Yeah.
But yet in the summer of 51, his band, his traditional jazz band, with him playing the banjo in it, played the Royal Festival Hall, Festival of Britain Year, a concert with two American soloists on it. Because they were on it, the union blacklisted them all, including Lonnie, the two English bands that played, he actually got trouble over it, see, but almost a year before he joined my band, he played the banjo in his own trad band, so I mean...
Right.
I didn't understand that at all. I couldn't see the point. Oh, but never mind.
Never mind. Okay.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, what was Lonnie like as a person? Was he? How did you get on with him? Okay.
Well, Lonnie was. He could be irritating, but that we all can be at times. But Lonnie was the personification of the smart aleck. You see.
Yeah.
He was like that, you know. And that's all right if you don't mind. But some people. And when we started the band out, we had the late Ken Collier playing the trumpet in the band, you see,
for
a side out. Now, Ken couldn't stand smart alecks. To him, the worst thing in the world to have anywhere near him but a smart aleck. Lonnie, of course, played up to that by being more like it. So, of course, Ken got more annoyed,
wind him up a bit.
Well, it wasn't difficult to wind Ken up, but Lonnie was a bit given that. And, I liked him very much.
Yeah.
I always liked him and enjoyed playing with him. Well,
he was a great player, wasn't he? A great skipper, man.
That's right, sure.
Now, his name was Anthony James Donegan and was called Lonnie when a presenter confused him with Lonnie Johnson,
He was on a concert. Lonnie Johnson was one of the American guests on that concert in 1951, the Festival of Britain.
Yeah.
Right? Lonnie Johnson was on that concert, and that's when it happened that the announcer announced Donegan as Lonnie Donegan.
Yeah.
Because he announced Lonnie Johnson.
He announced Lonnie Johnson before.
And he knew that Donegan liked Lonnie Johnson, so he called Lonnie Donegan.
So that's how he got his name, Lonnie.
That very occasion when he played the banjo, long before I was supposed to have taught him, was the very one when he got the name.
so he was known as Lonnie when you first met him then, was
yes,
he?
Yes, yes. I hadn't met him before that, is
you met him in 54.
Right. I mean, we didn't call him to his face Lonnie because it was like a stage name in a sense, a bit. So, I mean, to me,
you call him Anthony as well.
No, he was Tony.
Tony.
His son, Anthony, is called Anthony.
Oh, right.
But Tony Donegan, Anthony Donegan, was in fact known as Tony.
Right. Yeah. Now, going on to Monty, how is Monty Shuntown these days? Because last time I met you, said he'd been ill.
He had been very ill, and he's better than he was. He's given up playing altogether, but his health is better than it was. He had a bad time with a heart operation that wasn't properly handled.
Yeah.
He had the misfortune to be one of those health service hospitals which you read about in the papers where they leave old ladies lying on trolleys for weeks.
That's right. You told me that last year.
It wasn't like that particularly, but it was badly handled. It's twice in fact. So and he took a long time to get over that, but he's over it enough. But by the time he could have maybe started playing the clarinet again after about 3 years, and his wife said, "Look, if you go on tour again, you're not all that strong now." I said, "I know what'll happen. You'll be miles away and you'll die and I shan't even bloody see you."
Yeah.
He said, "Right," he said, "I won't do it."
Right.
So he won't do it.
So what's his real name? Was that his real name? Or has he got a,
his name is Monty Chaim Sunshine.
Right.
That's his name. Monty Chaim Sunshine,
right.
That's right.
So how long were you known as the Barber Sunshine Hot Six?
Well, we started, what happened was that Monty and I had the idea we both had our own amateur band in 1952. Well, we already had that for a year or two, see. And in 52 we got talking a lot. We said, look, we're never going to learn this music. There's no way of learning it. There's no books you can get. Mm. You've got to try and make it up, but you've got to try and, you do it by trial and error and experience.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that, therefore, if you don't get the experience of playing all the time, once a week, will mean you might learn to play it in 50 years if you're lucky.
Yeah.
See, so we said, we've got to get a band that plays all the time.
That's right.
The only way to get that is a professional band that doesn't have any other job, you see. So we said, we've got a professional band. Now, it's quite hard to find enough kindred spirits who believed in that. First of all, we got Lonnie Donegan. Lonnie, at the time, he was at the time doing National Service. He was stationed at Woolwich Arsenal.
Yeah.
And he was off over the water coming to our rehearsal. You see, so he came along, so he was keen.
Yeah.
And we had two other guys who were keen. That was a bass player, Jim Bray, and the drummer, Ron Bowden. Bowden was playing drums in Monty Sunshine's amateur band. And Jim Bray was playing the bass in Lonnie's amateur band, because he had his own amateur band.
Yeah.
So he'd get a bit more playing, you see. So then we had five. We had no trumpeter at the time. And so we played. And when someone said, come and play something in a club, we didn't know what to call it, so we said the Barber Sunshine 5. We didn't say Hot Six, but we said Barber Sunshine 5. That's what we said, you see, because it was not his band nor mine, but just our band, you see.
Yeah.
And that's what we called it, until in the beginning of 53, we'd be joined by the late Ken Collier. Pat Halcox was going to join up with us, but turning pro, his parents talked him out of it because he was studying. They thought he should finish his studies first, which is not unreasonable. They supported him for quite a few years while he was studying, so they thought he should carry on to the end. So that meant then Ken Collier had been on a visit in New Orleans, he came back, and so we invited him to join the band. We said, look, we better now we know what to call the band, Ken Collier's band, because Ken Collier's been in New Orleans, people all want to come and hear what he's learnt over there, he's interesting, he hasn't been around for a while, you see.
Yeah.
So Ken Collier's band, so after that time, the Barber Sunshine 5 didn't exist anymore, you see,
right.
Not at all. So, but it was just a temporary thing for the time being, when we hadn't got a name for the band yet.
Right. How many recordings and appearances did you make with Lonnie in the 90s? Because you appeared with him a few times, didn't you?
We did 100, more than 100 concerts.
Yeah.
That's to say, of the 40th anniversary reunion,
which
began in April 94 and finished in May 95, or a bit later even.
Yeah.
We did over 100 concerts with the full original cast, Lonnie included, right? But Lonnie had in fact guested with us other times as well.
Yeah.
He played a tour with us several times, just doing guest spot with the band, and a couple of skiffle numbers with me on the bass and banjo, that sort of stuff, you know. So he didn't, but of the full original band, it was over 100 concerts.
Right. So what made you come up with the name? Because last year you told me you and Lonnie invented the name Skiffle, didn't you?
We didn't invent it, no. There's an old record. There's an old record from 1929 where an American record company who specialised in black music, blues and so on, and gospel songs, in the days of 78 RPM records, there were no tape recorders.
Mm.
Records were recorded on the spot, and that
used to go straight onto the disc, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, in fact, it was what they thought of much later with LPs as direct to disc. All 78 are direct to disc, is what they were calling.
Yeah.
Now the thing was that to try a sort of public relations idea, what they did was they dubbed bits of their current new releases onto each side of a 78, and then put some applause and party noise around it. You see?
Right.
Meant to be like a, what they call a rent party in somebody's house, you see.
Yeah.
And they called it on the label Hometown Skiffle.
Right.
And we implied, got the Skiffle must have meant a kind of get together, bluesy, boogie woogie, sort of jazzy, bluesy, Skiffle, you know. And the only other use of the word before had been in 1939, a very fine piano player called Dan Burley. He was the editor of the Amsterdam News, which is actually New Amsterdam, New York. It's the Harlem, the Harlem Black newspaper.
Right.
See, he was the editor of that. He played the piano, and he had a group, made two records called Dan Burley Skiffle Kings.
Yeah.
Playing kind of blues and boogie woogie, but not singing as I am, just the tunes. A couple of things he did Johnny Parker used to do with Hump's band.
Yeah.
One was called Flycat. I think Johnny called it some other name, some other kind of cat, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But so that it was sort of used, but it wasn't used as a technical description of a band. It wasn't like a big band or a jazz band, skiffle band. It was just skiffle was a kind of a free and easy sort of jam session, sort of any old stuff will do, but with a bluesy
right,
sort of angle.
And just developed.
And, we just thought, well, that's, and indeed, when we signed up with Ken Collier in '53, Lonnie and Ken Collier, who also sang blues and that sort of stuff, they played guitars, I played the bass, and Ken's brother Bill played the washboard, and we only called it, we kept having a skiffle session.
Yeah.
It wasn't that we called the band a skiffle group.
Mm.
We was having a skiffle session, you see.
Yeah.
And we said, people used to come sit in, it didn't matter, because you hadn't got to be skillful to do that, you see.
Mm.
So we did it, and then when Ken left, and Pat was going to join, in '54, that left, without Ken, it just Lonnie and me doing that. So
yeah.
The first few months, it was just Lonnie and me on the bass, Lonnie singing, we were playing the guitar.
Yeah.
And then a bit later, within about 3 or 4 months, we then decided to have the drums on it rather than washboard, you see.
Yeah.
So our drummer Ron Bowden played on. So Lonnie's the big best-selling EPs he made, which was called Backstairs Session and Skiffle Session on Pi, which were of course in the top 10, both of them, which is a record he had before the Beatles ever did.
Yeah.
Those have drums,
yeah,
not washboard. And of course, I never did play a TGS bass. I played a real bass.
Right. Yeah.
Although they talked about
that on Rock Island Line. Yeah, that was, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's a real bass.
Yeah.
In fact, Jim,
yeah,
Bray, the bass player, the guy who played bass in my band at the time, who's still playing now.
Yeah.
He has that bass that I played in Rock Island Line still.
Really? So he's got that bass. Bass, bass, yeah, it'd be worth something.
Yeah. I suppose. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you still do radio? And how many albums have you recorded in recent years?
Well, we've quite a lot. I forget. A lot of the time when you make a record, that it's live, and I mean, sometimes quite a few concerts get recorded, and the time you've got them there, you hear it, you think, well, we've done all those tracks, all those tunes,
yeah,
on another one.
That's right.
Then a few years later, you think, well, that could come out now, because it's the other one, you know, then it's a nice grouping, so we'll put,
yeah,
that one out then. So, you know, the number we've actually made by saying, let's go into a studio and record an album today.
Yeah.
Well, that overall altogether is probably at around 50.
Yeah,
in the 50 years, right?
Right.
On the other hand, if you do all the ones that were recorded at concerts and other bits,
and then there's extras on top.
That's about 50 or 100 more. Isn't it?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Quite a lot.
Right. So, what label do you record for now, then, Chris? Have you got?
Timeless main. It's a Dutch-owned purely jazz record label.
Yeah.
Called Timeless, as their slogan is, that is the best jazz is timeless. And we have a load of records on there. We recorded for most other labels in the past before.
Yeah.
You see. Back in the 50s, when we had, you know, Rock Island Line, those things. So,
I know you were on Pi and Decca, weren't you?
We were on Decca first.
Yeah.
We were on Decca very briefly, then we were on Pi, we were on Columbia, then we were back on Columbia, and then Pi had a great... After we left Pi in 58, they then had enormous success with things we'd recorded during that period.
Right.
Jeep Fleur, a year and a half after we left, and the best of Bull Barber and Milk on the LP, which is in the top 10 LPs from month to month. That was 63. That was 5 years after we left the label.
Right. So how much longer do you intend to carry on now? Because you're just going to go on as long as your health holds out, are you?
Nothing else I want to do.
No. Yeah.
I mean, I retired from a mathematical career with an insurance company.
Yeah.
In 1951.
Yeah.
You see. So, I mean, I've retired, you can't...
You said you can't retire from your hobby, can you? No, that's what you said.
I'm not about to try either.
But,
I just like it. I mean,
yeah, so you'll just carry on as long as possible.
Well, I mean, you know, if it gets irksome,
yeah,
or I can't get a band, you know, the guys all give up touring and they're not there anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the band's not, doesn't satisfy me musically, whatever. Mm. I don't know, I mean, you know, I can always go about, I mean, for example, like, I've done a lot of concerts as a kind of a guest semi-soloist in Van Morrison's band.
Yeah, I know you do guests on Van Morrison's,
yeah, well, I was on Van's concert in Chester last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a kind of, because he's a friend of mine, you see.
Yeah.
And I've known him for years and years, and he likes having people about who remember the old days. All his band don't remember the old days, but I remember.
So
I mean, I could always do that. There's lots of things I can do, but I like doing what we're doing, you see.
Yeah.
So I see no reason to change it.
Yeah, I would like to have interviewed him actually, but he wasn't for interviewing.
He's not keen, is he? Because
he's
coming. We've got a marvellous. They're doing a 75th birthday tribute concert for me in Liverpool.
Yeah.
On the 6th of July. That you know that place on the dock there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
auditorium there. They're doing that, and Van's guesting on it with us.
He's
coming to sing with us also. Hopefully Dr. John and one or two other people as well.
Yeah, right.
That'll
be good.
Big occasion, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a charity. It's an aid of a charity. It's a cancer charity. Now, my memory's gone. I'm getting old, obviously. Footballer. Liverpool footballer. I don't mean Kevin Keegan. After him, famous footballer.
I don't follow football, so I don't know.
The guy, he's ever so famous, but I always forget his name. So, his wife had cancer or something, and they started cancer.
So it's in aid of that.
So we're in aid of that, you see?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So where do you go from here? What's your next venue from after Chester?
Tomorrow in Telford.
Yeah, right.
Where the Industrial Revolution started.
Right.
For our pains.
Great. Well, I better leave it there because you're going
Thank
to get
so much.
Yeah. Is it okay to take a picture of you and Pat together?
Of course,
that possible?
Yes, we've got to be very quick, I think.
Yeah, I have to be quick. Yeah, that's.
Because we've got to start playing at the moment.